Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to the
network of David Duenez on MaxBoxing.com. I am your co-host, Steve Kim, joined as always from the city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, we have a special show planned this week because, quite frankly, there really isn't too much going on, and I don't think we could really fill 90 minutes, but good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you, man. How you doing?
Yes. We are having Larry Merchant on from about 4:15 to about 5 o'clock Pacific. If you want to tweet him a question or a comment, you can do so at SteveMaxBoxing or at Gabriel_Montoya and at MaxBoxingLive. Gabe, there's not a lot of stuff going on. The big story last week that I think was actually a non-story, but I got to give the marketing acumen of Floyd Mayweather credit. He put up an online vote between Marcos Maidana and Amir Khan, and he was going to give the fans, who we love so much, a chance to pick who he's going to pick next, or at least have their voice heard in terms of who he was going to face on May 3rd on pay-per-view. Did you put any credence into this vote?
No, none whatsoever. It's just fun. I think the funniest thing was that the numbers really weren't staggering. It wasn't hundreds of thousands of people voting. It wasn't millions. It was like, 40,000, something like that? That was kind of funny to me. But also, I mean, here's two choices that we're not really asking for. Which guy do you want me to beat? Do you want me to beat a boxer who's been stopped 2 times? Or do you want me to, and who's never fought at 147? Or do you want me to fight a guy that guy has beaten before, who's on the ups these days? But, I mean, really, Adrian Broner wasn't a bona fide 147. It was a good win because, everybody likes to see the villain get beaten. But these aren't challenging fights. They're not that interesting. And I think the numbers reflected that. But, no, I didn't give a damn, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, well, I'm going to reiterate this again. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but from the time – Amir Khan basically canceled his fight with Devin Alexander in the fall. And Gabe, you've been in the Bay Area for a good 6, 7, 8 months now. You're connected with those camp members. You talked to Amir Khan, Virgil Hunter. Hasn't it been kind of understood that it was going to be Khan Mayweather on May 3rd since the very time the Alexander fight was basically pulled from the plug?
Yeah, and I think that backfired. I think playing safe backfired. Because, I mean, if you can't beat Devin Alexander, then why should I have any faith in you at 47 when I've never seen you there and you don't want to face Devin Alexander? Well, he's not as good as Floyd Mayweather, so why should I be excited about that? Fortune favors the bold, not the guy that goes, let me just wait and see if I can get it based on my UK following. I think it kind of has backfired on them. And regardless if we're going to get Khan or not, and really none of these fights anybody's going to have any sort of choice unless Floyd's numbers drop dramatically, and I don't expect them to. It's going to be Khan. I mean, it felt that way. Khan seemed to feel that way. I think maybe Floyd's just kind of toying with the public and drumming up some sort of interest. But at the same time, look what Maidana did. Maidana fought his way into the picture. And in a sense, kind of deserves it a little bit more for what he's done, staying active, taking risky fights. And he's never in a bad fight, and he never disappoints in big fights. So you almost kind of want to see Marcos Maidana take a shot. I think it's going to still be Khan. I think it always has been.
Yeah, and the hustle that Floyd Mayweather is going to run, and a lot of his minions are going to buy into blindly because they are sheeple, is the fact they're going to justify it by saying, well, we voted on this. He's giving us what we want. However, it's based, I don't want to say it was a fixed election, okay? But the bottom line is he gave us 2 choices. It's not like he opened it up to the field. It's not like there was Sergio Martinez as the C. There wasn't Errol Landry as the D. There wasn't Gennady Golovkin as the E. There was basically A and B. And A and B
right. Are
both very flawed in their own ways. Like I wrote last week, there's no doubt, Gabe, I agree with you. Marcos Maidana absolutely, positively, quote-unquote, deserves the fight. But we've said this ad nauseum. In boxing, there's really no such thing as deserved. Either you can get it, you fit into the equation, you're at the right place at the right time, or you're vulnerable enough. Unfortunately, the pay-per-view business is just that. It is absolutely a business. And I'm just wondering, Gabe, why do you think, because we're now coming into the middle of February, it's been stated for a long time that Mayweather is going to fight on Showtime pay-per-view on May 3rd. I have no clue. People ask me on Twitter, what's the holdup? Gabe, do you have any theories as to why this fight has not been announced yet?
Maybe they're just hoping for someone else to come out of the sky. Is it a calculated risk? I don't really know. I mean, the Mayweather watch is always strange. And he alters it slightly. You know, the news around Super Bowl, sometimes it's an announcement, sometimes it's something else. Like we got this little poll. I think Floyd just likes to tell us when he's good and ready, you know, and I think he kind of, this is all kind of the warfare. If it's been Khan all along, then this is part of the warfare of just torturing the guy and saying, no, maybe you're not going to have the fight. Maybe I'll do something else. And then ultimately doing it. And meanwhile, Khan's kind of, you know, flying all over the country, but, you know, hitting different places to start training. He's sparring guys that spar with Andre Ward, apparently. If I'm Khan, I mean, when I spoke to him up here, this was a few months ago, we said if you're going to, you know, take a shot at Floyd, it's an interesting shot, you know, an interesting idea to have all that time to think about him and train about, you know, and think about one guy and get in supreme condition for one guy. And maybe his secret weapon is the way he's going to be at 47. I don't know. It's all intriguing, you know. I still think Khan, like you think, that it's an interesting style for Floyd, but I think after four rounds, maybe even two, Floyd figures out the timing and comes after him. But, you know, it could be an interesting fight. I don't know. It's not like Floyd fights like Maidana, who hurt Khan, or fights like Danny Garcia, who stopped Khan. The Prescott thing, I think he caught him early, and it was just one of those things. It was one of those great things, but still. I think with Floyd, you know, he's not going to be an aggressive guy who's going to go for broke. You know, Danny Garcia was successful because he decided to throw with Khan, and that was the way he was going to negate his speed, is by throwing three or four shots and risking taking hard blows and then land a home run punch. Would Floyd fight that way? I don't know. So it is an intriguing fight.
My theory on this is twofold. I think, number one, Floyd believes, you know what, I'm going to play this suspense out for as much as possible, as long as possible. I'm going to do this voting. I'm going to create some Twitter frenzy, which he did last week successfully. My hat's off to him. And I think we all had a lot of fun watching Maidana and Khan kind of campaign 140 characters at a time for this fight, damn well knowing that it was probably a rigged election in favor of Amir Khan. Second of all, I also think he wanted to punish Khan in his own way. Remember about a month ago, Gabe, when he announced, I think to the British media, I've signed my contract on my way to May 3rd. And I think in Floyd's world, that's disrespect. You don't tell people or you don't announce when Floyd Mayweather is going to fight, where, when, and who. Only Mr. Mayweather gets to do that. And I think he was actually trying to leave Amir Khan twisting in the wind. And so there we go. I think May 3rd, I think it is going to be Amir Khan, and he's going to have the out. And some people are going to lap it up. He's giving the public what they want. Gabe, speaking of giving the public what they want, I brought this up on Twitter. Errol Lara is a fine fighter, and I'm one of his bigger advocates. I don't think this is just a bigger version of Guillermo Rigondeaux. I don't think he's nearly as skilled, but I think he's much more crowd-pleasing. I actually like his resume top to bottom. I think he's one of the best 54-pounders in the world, if not the premier junior middleweight in the world. But when fighters who are knowingly at Golden Boy call out fighters who are entrenched at HBO, given the climate of this business, when you start calling out fighters on the other side of the street, isn't that just plain grandstanding nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, I think, but at some level too, you know, you can't really blame a fighter for wanting more work and wanting to be able to fight within the field. You know, it's a shame, and I think the Cold War kind of shows. This shows that the Cold War hurts the whole sport, hurts the fighters. I mean, there's a field that it should be open, and the promoters should be fighting against each other to prove who has the better stable, to decimate each other's stables. That's the kind of war I want to see. What's going on here is, you know, either you're with us or you're frozen out. Lara, you know, Lara right now I would put him in with Kirkland. But I imagine Kirkland's on the outs and not available. You know, I don't know if Kirkland's people would want to take
it. Is
that
it Kirkland is on the outs or 50 Cent? I mean, we got to go to the belly of the beast to really look at the problem. And Gabe, you're right. Listen, if you were to put a gun to my head or at least gave me a magic wand where I could make a fight, and I'm going to go Mayweather here, would you rather see Gennady Golovkin fight Andy Lee or Arizlandi Lara? I think the overwhelming majority of the public out there that has no horse in this race, doesn't really care except to see the best fights, would much rather see the Cuban stylist. But I just think it's interesting that Arizlandi Lara, isn't he, for all intents and purposes, the golden boy version of Guillermo Rigondeaux, a talented Southpaw Cuban who the promoter has absolutely no idea what to do with?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the Cubans, it's a tough sell, you know, and I get that, you know, that there isn't exactly a market to take them there, and it's not like, oh, well, he speaks Spanish, so let's just put him in front of a bunch of Mexicans because they'll accept him. And, you know, culturally, it doesn't really work. You always have to kind of package him either with a great opponent and or, you know, good fights all around him. And it's just hard to plan for it. That's the simple financial responsibilities. Phone lines are heating up a little bit, but we got Larry Merchant in about 4 minutes.
Yeah, Gabe, one last point on this. I don't think that the Golovkin and K2 camp can now play Mr. Nice Guy. In other words, they can't be good boys. I think they have to be really proactive in trying to make fights, and I don't think they can be complicit in the Cold War. I've told this to Tom Loeffler privately, who I think has done a masterful job of guiding this. I don't know if you agree with me or not, Gabe, but I think it's time now for them to say to Lara's camp and to Al Haymon or Golden Boy or whoever's really running that ship, okay, your fighter wants to fight. Let's start to negotiate. Put up or shut up. But just to say uniformly, well, you can't do it. You're on the wrong side of the street. Well, at that point, you have to blame Golovkin a little bit because now they are complicit in going along with this Cold War. Agree or disagree?
I would agree with that. I mean, I don't know what Lara's contract is with Showtime or deal with. You know, I don't think he's a fighter that's bowled into one network. He's a piece that can move. Golovkin's a guy that needs challenges, and I tend to think as his career goes along, you know, Triple G's, that it's going to be. And I'm not saying putting him in Hopkins, you know, era yet, but I think it's going to be more like that kind of career where it's going to be about good fights, solid fights along the way, or like Hagler, where you just got to kind of plug away and wait for your big win, for your Hagler Hearns or your Trinidad to come along and take out. I think Lara, you know, he's not a gigantic guy. I wouldn't call him, you know, he's not a middleweight to me, but I think he could carry the weight or do something with it. He handled Paul Williams very well, and certainly a bigger guy than Triple G. That's a good, fun fight, and I think it's incumbent. If Al wants to get his hooks back into HBO, that's a good way to do it.
Gabe, I think that the Lara fight would be a solid victory for Golovkin. I think it would be a feather in his cap, but I also think there's a bit of a no-win situation. I think Lara is looked upon as a 54-pounder, so immediately people are going to say he's a blown-up 60. So right there, already there's going to be some detractors over this fight. Also, as much as I like Lara, I know this. We were there ringside sitting together, Gabe. He was this close to being pushed off the cliff by Alfredo Angulo. Now, Angulo's a rugged, tough customer. I don't think he brings nearly the skill set or the facets or the layers of Gennady Golovkin. And that was at 54. And now we're dealing with a guy in Golovkin who reportedly runs light heavyweights and cruiserweights out of the gym. I just don't know if Lara has the overall durability to deal with Golovkin for 36 minutes at a time. But again, with all that being said, it to most people, and I would agree with them, it is a upgrade over this current version of Andy Lee. Gabe, you want to get on the phone lines and get Mr. Merchant on the phone?
Yes, I will disappear for a second and do that. I'll be right back.
All right, folks, if you want to call in, we're not going to be taking calls, but if you want to tweet in a question or a comment to Larry Legend, Larry Merchant, please tweet us at SteveMaxBoxing, at Gabriel_Montoya, at MaxBoxingLive. Larry Merchant, formerly of HBO, he will be joining us for about the next 45 minutes, taking your questions and comments about the sport of boxing, past, present, and future. He is still very, very tied in to the sport of boxing. Once again, you're listening to the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya on the Leave It in the Ring radio network on MaxBoxing.com. And I already see some of your tweets coming up. We're going to line these up, and we will have Larry answer them for you as soon as Gabe is able to corral him on one of his various phone lines. Gabe, any luck?
We're here. I guess not.
I'm
back with Larry Legend, Mr. Larry.
Larry.
Mitchell. Welcome to the show.
Good Monday to you. How you doing, Larry?
I'm doing good, guys. How you
Larry,
doing?
Larry, the
What's
big
up?
Topic on Twitter today was the Cold War, and you've been through it all. I remember when Don King was running Showtime. Main events had their allegiances. Top Rank had their deals that were exclusive. Do you think this version of the Cold War between Top Rank, HBO, and then Golden Boy and Showtime, is it any worse than anything else you've seen in the past, Larry?
I don't recall that in the King Aram battle for supremacy, that there seemed to be lockouts, that personalities were involved.
Mm-hmm.
When there came a time that both sides could profit from a fight, there were a few occasions where they said, okay, this is bigger than our rivalry. Example, eventually, Lewis and Tyson happened. And there were other such moments. But this one seems frozen. I don't think as yet, because of the competitive natures of HBO and Showtime, that we've seen really negative consequences. But we may be on the cusp of it. For example, I think that Tim Bradley has put himself in a position to be on Mayweather's shortlist, or his shortlist, particularly if he beats Pacquiao legitimately the next time. That won't happen because he decided that his best interest in the future was to stay with Top Rank. We don't know yet. The consequences haven't been strongly felt yet. There are good fighters in the welterweight divisions on both sides that make sense and that will make exciting fights. But I don't see the fight where the ice cracks because both of them say, well, this is bigger than our rivalry or feud.
Gabe?
When you look at the sport, I mean, you've been through it all, as Steve said. Over the last maybe, I don't know, 10 years, actually 14 now since the Ali Act, I've heard Teddy Atlas talk about the National Commission, different things like the anti-doping movement have risen over the last 4 years where the fighters are kind of, you know, demanding better standards. But it doesn't seem like the media responds as a whole. They respond in pockets. What do you think? Do you think adversarial journalism could work in boxing? And if we were a more a united front, instead of worrying about like the BWAA awards and dinner, but instead what the tough questions and holding people accountable on a regular basis?
Well, you can no longer herd journalists and you can herd cats. I mean, I think there's a general and strong majority of journalists who would like to see stronger measures on performance-enhancing drugs as one item. I don't know how you get a unified campaign. And boxing has a problem that other sports don't have, which is that the fights are one-offs. You promote a fight, you put a lot of money into the promotion, people make travel plans, and so forth. You can't just put a stop to it 3 days before the fight when a drug test comes in positive. How do you handle that? Well, you have to make the punishment after the fact strong enough to discourage it. We've seen some of that with Peterson and a couple of others, where they were sidelined long enough that maybe they felt that there were consequences and that it wasn't worth doing. It has to be strong consequences, just as we're seeing now in the major league team sports, to matter.
Larry, two-part question before we go to the tweets. My question is this. Do you sense more interest this time around for Pacquiao Bradley, the second chapter? And what do you make of Floyd Mayweather putting up his next fight for, quote-unquote, a vote?
On Pacquiao and Bradley, I think there is more interest. I think there are a lot of narratives on both of them. What Bradley has done since the Pacquiao fight and the decision he got that most of us thought was a wrong one, the fights he's been in, and Pacquiao, how he fought in his last fight and whether that indicates he's no longer the Pacquiao of stories and song, and that this is a new reinvention, and how that pans out, and it's a virtually even fight from the odds makers, and rightly so. Maybe in this case, Bradley turns out to be the Seahawks and Pacquiao the Broncos. So there are a lot of storylines that will resonate before the fight and after the fight. And Mayweather is supposed to fight 3 weeks after that fight. And it's going, and maybe this is just a reminder that he's going to have a fight coming up. He's been extremely clever in poaching on other fights and using whatever tools there are to advance his causes. Is that real? I don't know. It certainly doesn't look real. Whether Maidana and Khan seems to make more economic sense because of the money he can generate in Britain. But I think Maidana would capture some interest because of his fight against Broner. And there would be a really good segue from Pacquiao Bradley to a Mayweather-Maidana fight. And don't forget, there's also another potent pay-per-view fight a month later with Cotto and Martinez. So is Mayweather going to be satisfied with Khan, which everybody will assume is just another payday kind of fight? I'm just interested in watching it, and maybe I'm overthinking the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Larry, the headline today, after all the precincts have reported, is Khan defeats Maidana. I don't expect that to change. Larry, let's get to some of the questions. It's from Alarso. Larry, what's your favorite fight of all time and the favorite one you've commented on?
Gee, Steve, there have been so many. Voluntarily or involuntarily, my mind goes to Hagler and Hearns. As 8 minutes when we couldn't hold our breaths. But I've seen just so many wonderful fights. I mean, certainly, you know, for example, Tyson Douglas and Leonard Hearns and going back the first big fight I ever covered was Robinson Basilio. So there've been an awful lot of them that I would put in the highest level fights. What about Morales and Barrera 1?
I remember somebody
told me who had Morales, and Morales got the decision, if you recall, that he didn't want to take the money that he won in the bet because he was so excited by the fight. So, there's been a lot of them.
Larry, here's another one from Joshua. What are your thoughts on Lomachenko Salido? I find this fight to be fascinating, Larry, because obviously he's a gifted amateur. But one thing about Salido, this is a hardened seasoned pro. Do you think he's biting off too much too soon?
Well, that's what we're going to find out. Lomachenko is a brilliant prospect. And there are outstanding amateurs who have more skill than some seasoned pros and even title holders, however many there are. But what happens if you get to the 8th, 10th rounds of a really hard, tough fight where an amateur has not been? That's why over history, fighters are brought along step by step, round by round, to see and both to build them as attractions and to build them as athletes. But there have been a few occasions, if we go back to Floyd Patterson, who fought Pete Rademacher, an Olympic gold medalist, in his first professional fight for the heavyweight championship of the world. And Ali, who fought Leon Spinks in about Spinks's 8th or 9th professional fight and lost because he didn't take him as seriously as everybody else did. So it's not without precedent. We're seeing multi-medalists who have hung around in the amateurs for longer than fighters used to because their countries have supported them. Supposedly, Ximing got over $1 million after he won his first gold medal so that he would stay 4 years as a, quote, amateur to win another gold medal for China. This guy looks like a real fighter, but as you say, Steve, he's fighting a really serious, hardened professional fighter, and we'll see what happens if he's taken into late rounds.
This is my question, Larry. We talked about Canelo versus Mayweather the last time you were on.
Mm-hmm.
You felt that the kid had a shot in it, and I tend to wonder if the 2 pounds did something to him. He's really muscular and losing it. You know, I think it may have taken something. But overall, he was handled by Floyd. What were your thoughts on the fight? But also, in that, to me, he got kind of blanked or maybe won maybe a couple rounds. But now he's a pay-per-view star, and Richard Schaefer says maybe 3 pay-per-views this year. How do you feel about all of that?
Well, one, I was wrong. And I was wrong because I thought that once Canelo saw the issue, that he was capable of going, just deciding to do a Provodnikov, okay?
Yeah.
And just to come forward and put all kinds of pressure on Mayweather, which is the old-fashioned way to fight a guy who is slick and quick and smart. And but he didn't have that in him. Maybe it's because he's the youngest brother of a whole bunch of brothers, and when you get a lot of family members in, they don't want the kid to get hit too much. And he's been very smart about his defense and offense and switching from one to the other in the past. But I thought that he wasn't going to try to outbox Floyd. That was a suicide mission. But that he would turn it up, and he couldn't. He didn't. Maybe he can't. Maybe he never will. Or maybe if he runs into that situation, he will the next time. As far as him going, go ahead, Steve.
No, my question is this then. After watching him fight against Mayweather, does that change your view on his overall ceiling as a fighter, or do you believe that that was just Floyd being Floyd and that any young fighter would be flummoxed at that point?
Well, I think it takes an unusual, either very aggressive fighter and who uses smart aggression to deal with somebody as proficient as Mayweather is. I think Provodnikov might give him the most trouble out there. He'd be in his chest all night. There would be no way that Mayweather could hold him off. Now, Mayweather would be a favorite and would to win the fight, obviously. But Provodnikov has got the kind of style to go after him. The other guy who will beat him is some younger, quicker guy who comes along and has also got some superior skills, but is younger and quicker. As far as Canelo is concerned, no, he's 22 or just about to turn 23. He's got time to overcome that. And I think that, certainly they all know that. I think that he's going to, I wish that his fights were going to be on television rather than pay-per-view, at least one of them until he gets into a serious fight. But I guess the economics of it is that they can't afford him, that if he can draw 200,000 or 300,000 pay-per-view, then that's $5 or $6 million, and they're not going to pay that for a fight.
Larry, here's a tweet from Marcel again, asking if you have spoken to Floyd since that infamous interview. He actually did come up to you and apologize, I think at the Cotto weigh-in, and he says, please tell him he is a legend for putting Floyd in his place. With that being said, Larry, how taken aback were you that after what happened with that famous quote of yours, that Floyd actually came up to you and said, hey, I'm sorry?
I took it as a good gesture and took it on its face value. I didn't try to psychoanalyze him or look for other motives. He did it. Good for him. I thanked him on the air in the post-fight interview. And that it is what it was.
Gabe, you have a question?
Yeah, at the end of his career, kind of around this period of time, De La Hoya was still taking risks. I mean, he fought Floyd when he was a bit past it, when Oscar was, not Floyd. He fought Pacquiao, too, towards the end of it. Do you think Floyd will ever hit that point where he risks against the younger guys or that skilled, quicker guy, or are we just going to be kind of seeing this same movie over and over again? You know, which style do you want me to beat, this style or this style over here? But even though the guys are not really up to the challenge.
Well, we have to remember that Oscar fought a lot of exciting fights and fought everybody. And that was what he did. He lost to Trinidad, fight many of us thought he won, despite what he did at the end of the fight when he thought he had won and coasted. And he came back and he fought Mosley. And, you know, so I give him the highest marks of being the type of professional fighter that I think the sport needs. And that's aside from the fact that he was this extraordinary box office phenomenon. I don't know. You know, I look at Hopkins, and Hopkins is doing what most fighters do, which is who want to carry on. He is a phenomenon, a physical phenomenon, and a guy who is apparently trained at the highest level consistently over his career, and is so dedicated. But many of them start to become, they start defending what they have earned instead of going after what they want. And they start to fight in a more defensive posture, a more schooled, veteran, experienced way. And that's probably what Mayweather is going to try to do. But we have seen, apparently, we have seen at times when he has tried to seize control of the fight offensively, but offensively in a style that is still very calculated. He's not taking chances. He's not trying to land the big punch unless he breaks an opponent down, which hasn't happened much since he's moved up in weight. So as long as he's got this thing going and as long as people are willing to pay for it, I don't see that he's going to change.
Larry, here's one from ASFD. Larry, did promoters, manager, or even HBO execs ever come to you for suggestions or advice on fights or fighters?
It's happened occasionally. It used to happen more often at HBO when Lou DiBello was running the boxing department, and on a few other occasions where they'd ask me about a matchup, or I would send them a memo a couple of times a year about what I thought was happening and who I thought needed a, you know, could be stepped up to a bigger fight and so on. It does not happen regularly. I do have conversations when I go on the road with Top Rank and I do their international broadcasts and, but they're pretty good. They're pretty good at their business. They know what they want to do. And but I have, you know, I think like all of us in the game, I think, well, what's going to happen, for example, with Pacquiao and Bradley, and what happens if Bradley wins, and what happens if Pacquiao wins, and where do they go from there? And I have my thoughts, and I'll probably share them with them if they're interested.
Larry, aren't you the one, though, that suggested to the various parties, and I've always said you're 2-0 against De La Hoya. You're the one who first came up with De La Hoya, Shane Mosley won, and then you said, hey, wait a minute, back in 2008, I believe, why doesn't Manny Pacquiao fight De La Hoya? Those are two merchant matches, aren't they?
Immodest as it may seem, yes.
Okay, there we go. Dave?
I suggested Mosley after Oscar lost to Trinidad to Bob Arum. And the reason being that I knew from covering all of Mosley's fights that he was outgrowing the lightweight division. And I thought he was capable of not having to stop at 140 as many as most fighters do these days and go right from lightweight to welterweight, because I thought Oscar was a natural welterweight, maybe even a small welterweight, and I knew of their backgrounds in L.A. and having boxed when they were kids. And then, of course, with the Pacquiao, I thought to myself, watching him as he moved up to 30 and 35, you know, what if we have another Henry Armstrong here? And what is the big fight? There were no big fights looming. And I thought, well, why doesn't he go into a fight with Oscar, who's a huge attraction and is on the downside of the arc of his career, and let's see what happens. I mean, I didn't have the strongest – I didn't have a conviction he was going to win. I just thought it was a huge event, and why not? If he lost, he lost to a bigger, better fighter, and if he made a hell of a fight out of it, good for him. And I had no idea that he was going to be the only fighter ever to stop Oscar and how good he had really become. There's another fight going back in the day, Steve, which was Oscar against Whitaker. At the time, they were looking for the opponent that would be a major statement for Oscar. And Whitaker was one of the guys on the short list. I don't remember who else there was. And I told him I thought that Oscar could gain the most credibility by fighting and beating Whitaker, who was also on the downside of his career. So I think I'm 1-2.
Or 2-1, actually. 2-1. Not bad, Larry. Gabe, go ahead.
You know, this is from one of our Twitter followers, @_BradleyPearson, who lays it out that, you know, Rigo has one fight left, I think, with Top Rank. If he fights that out and goes over to Golden Boy, let's say, who has kind of more options for him, what do you think about his chances? And do you think Golden Boy would pick up somebody like that and put him in with, like, say, a Leo Santa Cruz or an Abner Morris?
I don't think Golden Boy or Showtime would be interested in him any more than HBO is. And by the way, in New York, at the Garcia fight, I ran into some of Rigondeaux's people, and they told me he has taken on a new trainer. And the what that means is that he is going to try to make a serious effort to modify his run and hit style so that the networks will be interested in him. We'll see if he can do it. Didn't he try with Freddie briefly, Steve, and that didn't work?
Well, he's been with a lot of trainers, Larry. There's no doubt. There was Ron Shields. There was Freddie Roach. You know,
His style is so deeply embedded in his muscles, in his memory, and was so successful in terms of winning that he has a hard time admitting, and this is based on interviews I did with him before his last fight, that is anything wrong and why should he? And even when I said, well, you know, when a guy is too good for the opponents in his division, then they usually move up in weight. Would you consider that? No. Why would he have to? So he really doesn't understand how the professional prize fighting works, but he got such bad reviews for winning every minute of every round of his last fight that I think now he's going to make an effort.
Larry, I know you're a harsh critic of that style, and I don't disagree with you. I can appreciate what he does. I wouldn't pay two nickels to see him fight on my own dime. But then other people would say, well, wait a minute. What is the difference between Guillermo Rigondeaux and Pernell Whitaker in your view, Larry?
Well, one difference is that Whitaker was an American gold medalist.
Mm-hmm.
And he built somewhat of a fan base in America. Rigondeaux comes to America in his early 30s, having won two gold medals, and is unknown. And unfortunately, the large Cuban population in southern Florida does not support the Cuban fighters who have defected. And so nobody cares. Also, the times have changed. And the by that I mean, if you had a Whitaker, you know, back in the 80s and the early 90s, and he fought a fight in which he also won every round, and it wasn't a particularly exciting or dynamic fight, well, 2 weeks later, you were going to get a big heavyweight fight. And 3 weeks after that, you were going to get another good fight involving Roy Jones or Chavez Sr. or any number of other fighters. So it was okay. We've got this guy, and we can get through it. And he was fighting the best fighters out there. And he was a bit of a showman, and he was a good story. So he got away with it. And then he did fight Oscar, and he did have the big knockout to get to that fight. Whereas, Rigano, unfortunately for him, that kind of style only works at certain times in certain places, where for one reason or another, a guy connects with a fan base.
Gabe, you have another tweet?
Question. Yeah, here's one from Lance Jr., I believe his name is. Would Floyd ever fight Khan in the UK to sell more pay-per-view? And I'm kind of curious about that, too. Do you think he'll, like a Robinson, say, do a European tour? Does he need to? Would that help?
You know, I think him going over there would make a lot of sense in a way. The Brits appreciate that style a little more than many of us do.
Mm-hmm.
But, he's a Vegas guy. If he's going to fight 3, 4, 5 more times, and he's got relationships with the hotel in Vegas and with pay-per-view in America, he may not want to do that. Has he ever fought in New York?
No, I think the closest he's done that is Atlantic City early on in his career. And I think he fought Chop Chop Corley, and I think that might have been his last East Coast fight.
I think he fought
Arturo Gatti in Atlantic City.
He fought Gatti in Atlantic City, but I can remember when he didn't want to fight. Remember, he didn't want to fight a rematch with the what's his name again? The Mexican lightweight.
Luis Castillo in L.A.
Castillo,
he called it Baby Mexico.
In Los Angeles or New York, because he didn't think he would get the best of it from judges in those cities. So, listen, that's been his history. He's reluctant to travel. He's got a hell of a deal there in Vegas. And but I think it would be a refreshing change and refreshing for him as well as the sport if he went over there.
Larry, here's a question I think I already know the answer to. Mr. Merchant, this is from B.S. Whistler. Mr. Merchant, as you are still working as a boxing commentator, did Floyd Mayweather have you forced out at HBO?
Well, unfortunately, the timeline doesn't work that way. I left HBO, agreed to leave HBO, about, I don't know, somewhere between four and 6 months, maybe even longer, before that deal was even negotiated.
Mm-hmm.
He left HBO several months after my announcement came, an announcement that I knew for several months before. So,
Larry, as fractured as the business is, and HBO and Showtime are now basically rivals in a sense that they're differing leagues that compete against each other in terms of programming. I've always said you are the last real journalist allowed to be on the air calling that level of fights. Do you think the guys calling the fights now are under some sort of pressure, whether it's stated or not, to toe the party line more than ever before as it relates to their networks?
I think they do what they do because that's what they do. And, you know, if there is, you know, if that's if that is the perception you have, I don't think it's some calculated thing on their parts so much as they were selected because that's who they are and what they do. I think that I don't think that Ken Hirschman, the new head of HBO Sports, would have selected me 35 or 37 years ago, because I don't think he wanted someone like me at ringside. But I couldn't change who I was simply because he wanted the matchmaking and the fight itself to stand on its own rather than making problems for him. It was I'd been told, you know, way back in the day by Seth Abraham, who really got a boxing going on HBO, you create problems for me, but don't stop doing what you're doing.
Larry, with that said, before Gabe has a question for you, we all say stuff that angers people. Has there ever been anything you regretted saying on air?
There probably is. I'd have to think about it. I'm sure about it. I rationalize it by saying, well, that's what I thought at the time, and it was a mistake.
Sure.
You know, I've thought that there may have been an interview here and there where I may have been a little tougher on somebody than that somebody had earned. And I'm a severe critic of myself. And after every fight, I wasn't the kind who went back and listened to myself or anything, but I thought of the stuff I coulda, woulda, shoulda done, and so on, and wrote it down and try to remember to do it the next time.
You going back to the question of announcing, I interviewed Paulie Malignaggi a couple of weeks ago, and he kind of intimated that it's kind of time and place. Like, we don't go to Al Bernstein or even Jim Lampley until he did the Fight Game for our news. And a boxing match is entertainment. It's not necessarily a news show, but at the same time, do you think it should be like, say, a guy had tested positive and he's returning back from that? Should that be included as part of the lead-in and let the audience know what they're seeing, or do you think it's not the time or place?
Well, I'm not quite sure what time and place we're talking about. If you're talking about Jim and his boxing show.
No, I'm talking about, like, you know, you're commentating ringside at a fight, and a guy comes up that's tested positive, and they're going to fight for the world title. Do you mention that? Are you allowed to
sure.
mention that sort of thing?
Absolutely. You know, when, I mean, anything that's related to the fight, when Chavez Jr., have issues before fights, you can't overlook that because it's how does this affect him in this fight. When Mike Tyson was having issues, even before Douglas Tyson, we reported them. He was not only in the back pages of the sports of newspapers where the sports department is. He was often on the front page for various antics, and he was out on television with telling his story and revealing issues that he's having. We wouldn't be doing our job for the simple reason that it plays into the event. I mean, mm-hmm. after, for example, Tyson Douglas, well, then there were a lot of his fans or even the media saying, well, he didn't take him seriously. Well, he wasn't in shape. Excuse me, that's what we've been talking all along, the side issues, the distractions that come to a famous athlete or fighter sometimes take away from the main attraction of what they do. And they get away with it against this opponent or that opponent, and then one day they don't get away with it because the guy is good enough on that night to beat them. So you can't say on the one hand, don't bring up all the issues and problems that a fighter may have had before a fight, and then when he loses, say, well, he had problems before the fight.
Yeah.
Larry,
you know, when look, as I've often said, and as we all know, journalism is not a popularity contest. And if fans don't see it the way journalists do, and long live the difference.
Larry, here's a question that goes right into that from our good friend Dave Duenas. Leave it in the ring. Larry, do you think Paulie is a reporter or just a commentary guy, and what is the difference in your view?
I think he's very good at what he does. Incidentally, when HBO was looking for a new commentator a few years ago, I recommended him to HBO.
Nice.
I like Paulie. I don't think he's, I think we have to know he's giving the view from a fighter. And he's outspoken, and I like that. I don't always agree with him any more than people agreed with me. I think he as you have pointed out, Steve, in your column, he sees plots all around him, whether it's for or against him or any other fighter, and sometimes maybe those plots exist, and sometimes they're just in the minds of fans. But in general, I think he's a good analyst of what's going on. And a good, refreshing a voice. But when he suggests that journalists aren't doing their job about PEDs and so forth, journalists have a higher standard of proof than fighters
yes.
do.
Yes.
You know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Before we wrap it up
Thank
here, Jimmy and Leia, they want to say, tell Larry, I believe 50 years ago he would have kicked Mayweather's ass. And here's a question from @BuffBoxing. Larry, who did you enjoy doing the post-fight interviews the most? Was there a particular fighter that you really connected with?
Long before I did prize fights, I did interviews after every event you can imagine. So, yes, there are some athletes and fighters who after an hour of hitting and getting hit, could still recall every punch that was thrown in a fight virtually, and some that couldn't. And, Bernard Hopkins once said to me after a fight, in which I questioned the the level of his opposition, and he did a whole rant. Well, he said, Larry, you and I ought to take this show on the road. Yeah, there were some fighters who were better than others and who tried hard. They want to connect with their fans, the fans, and a few of them were really good at that. And Ray Leonard.
Larry, I got one for you. You and Barrera seem to have a real good chemistry. I remember some of your interactions. Larry, one more thing before we let you go. I quoted you in a recent column about Gennady Golovkin, and you always told me one time, Steve, sometimes with unproven fighters, you have to trust your eyes. What do your eyes tell you about Golovkin?
Well, trust my eyes is something I say to myself before every fight. And it's a way of saying, you may have a conviction about what's going to happen in this fight. You may have a certain view of a certain fighter about it. But when you go into the fight and something is happening that it was unexpected, you've got to be, you got to trust your eyes in what you're seeing. And where Golovkin, as far as Golovkin is concerned, I mean, I saw him for about the first time for about 30 seconds, and I said, whoa, look at this. He looked like a really serious fighter who knew how to break down opponents, how to cut off the ring, and who was throwing punches with mean intentions, and yet had the that fine line of controlled aggression, he's a must see fighter if you love this sport.
Larry, listen, as always, we appreciate the time. Now, the next time we're going to see you, if I am not mistaken, is in Macau, February 22nd for HBO2. Am I correct?
That is correct. I'm not sure of the time because of the time difference between Macau and the U.S. It won't be on live here. It'll be on some sort of a delay, and I'm not sure of the time, but... Whereas most of my fights, the fights I do now, I'm only seen internationally, that fight will be on HBO2.
All right. Well, Larry, listen, we'll be tuning in, and we'll be talking very soon. Larry, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much, Larry. Take care.
And that was Larry Legend, Larry Merchant. Gabe, I got to tell you, we don't have a lot of guests on here. In fact, we were going to have one on last week, except – we didn't want any restrictions on what could be asked or subject matter, so we scrapped it. But if there's always a guy that has an open-door invitation, it is always going to be Mr. Larry Merchant.
No doubt. Yeah, it's just, you know, good storytelling, good knowledge. And he reminds us that, you know, that what we do is supposed to be journalism and you know, challenging truth to power. And granted, he was an HBO guy, ringside guy for a long time, and I think he picked his spots well, and he kind of showed that even because every one of us has a different role. You know, Al Bernstein, Farhood, all those guys have different roles ringside than you or I do. But you can still pick your spots. And Larry, like you said, is the last of the journalists at ringside, and few people knew how to pick him better than him. It's awesome to learn from him.
Gabe, you agree with me? He's the last of a dying breed. There will never be another guy that would be allowed to say or even have the guts to say what he said against the interests of his own broadcast network from this point going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very possible that that will never happen again. You know, I mean, but stranger things have happened. I think, yeah, at this point it depends on who's running things. Oh, Larry finally hung up. I think it depends on who's handling things, you know. Hirschman might, but I don't know. At the same time, I don't mean to denigrate the guy and knock his hustle, but Hauser used to write those great pieces at HBO. Now he's an advisor, and he doesn't write them anymore. And I don't really know who's holding him to power. You're pretty open about him. It doesn't seem like there's anything to really hold your feet over the fire about, but That to me was kind of a chilling move. Schaefer trying to, you know, ban me a couple of times is a chilling effect for what I reported on. I think it that's why I always go back to it. It sounds like a soapbox, but the media, we're all we have, and we're all kind of the sport has in some sense, because the regulators don't always regulate, and they certainly don't do it universally. I don't know if you followed the Association of Ringside Physicians thing about TRT. They come out, and they're going along with all these good studies that are coming out of UCLA, and the New York Times editorial board spoke on it as well, that this TRT, low T thing is a myth. And then, like, the next day, New Jersey comes out, well, we don't agree, and we're just going to do better drug testing. And they just undercut everything that the ARP is trying to do. The sport, you know, but then nobody reports on it, and that's the problem. I think Larry, people say what you want about him. He was honest, and he told the truth as he saw it. He trusted his eyes. And I don't know if we really have that ringside, so it's up to the media that's left to do that.
I'm just going to say this before we start taking some calls. And if you want to call in, we have about 25 minutes left on the next round with Gabe Montoya and Steve Kim. Number is 347-215-7598. There are things that are being said on the HBO broadcast right now that if Larry Merchant was on that broadcast team, they would be shot down. And you would have some real contentious moments that would make for great TV. But a lot of the stuff, a lot of the agendas that are being handed out by certain people would be snuffed out and challenged. Because Larry Merchant was never afraid to say stuff. I remember one time, it was Mosley and Roy Jones were in two one-sided fights in a doubleheader back in 1998, and he flat out said, "Tonight, folks, we brought you junk." And time and time again, when George Foreman, him and Larry fought like cats and dogs. He was always on George's case to just stick to one story. Or what are you talking about? And not only did it make for good TV, it was honest. And what I'm seeing out of HBO, and sometimes out of Showtime, are agendas. And they're not even well-kept agendas. There's no transparency to what they're doing in a lot of respects. Anyway, if you want to call in, again, the number, 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's go to the calls.
You've been on the longest in the 843. You're live on the next round. 843. Are you with us? 843?
And our first knockdown of the night.
All right, maybe just listening for the last hour. We thank you for it. 267, you are live on the next round. 267, are you there? Wow, two knockdowns right off the bat.
Hey, one more and we're out of here.
Yeah, in the 707, you're live on the next round. 707. 707, did you have a question? Guess not. All right.
You know, I'm getting the sense, Gabe, that most people are listening today. Quite frankly,
so.
There's not a lot to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, what's going on in the world of boxing? Not much. In the 787, you're live on the next round.
Hi, guys. How are you doing? It's Javier.
Oh, my God. Now, this is the voice
Javier.
That resonates with the public. It's Javier from Puerto Rico. Javier, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Just two quick questions. If Martinez Cotto does get made, and it's taking a long time, what kind of do you think we are going to see of Cotto? The one that fought Delvin and the brawler type, or the one that fought the Margarito the second time that was more like a boxer? That's the first one. And the second question I got, have you ever had a fight where someone knocked out his opponent in the first round, like Juanma Lopez did with Ponce de León, and Ponce de León is going to be a big favorite in the rematch?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, that's a question for guys like Hank Kaplan, God rest his soul, and Burt Sugar. But I can't remember that, Gabe. It's interesting because I was at that fight way back in 2008, which was during the heyday of one Kelly Pavlik. He was the main event that night against Gary Lockett in Atlantic City. But, Gabe, I'll be honest with you. I can't come – nothing comes to the front of my head about this scenario Javier's playing out where the guy got iced in about 90 seconds. 5 years, 6 years later, he's the favorite.
Yeah, you asked me that on Twitter, and I'm kind of thrown by it. I mean, you know, it's somebody brought up Vladimir Klitschko and Lehman Brewster, but, I mean, Vlad was the favorite in both of those fights. Nothing really changed, and I think that was more about what happened to Brewster in the interim.
But this is kind of a strange reversal. It's an interesting fight. I mean, is it really win or go home for both, do you think, or only for Lopez?
Well, listen, if you can't beat Lopez, this current edition of Wanma, you have no future. And one thing that would worry me about Daniel Ponce de Leon, he's starting to hit the canvas on a regular basis. But Wanma, I don't want to say there's not a lot left, but there's a reason why Top Rank released him after his last fight against Mikey Garcia. I would favor Ponce de Leon in that fight just purely based on battery life and also trajectory of career. Now, Javier, going to your first question, Gabe, I don't know about you, but from what I've seen of the wheels, which have a lot of wear and tear, a lot of tread on Sergio Martinez, and the way Freddie Roach likes his fighters to fight, I don't think there's any doubt we're going to see a very aggressive Miguel Cotto coming forward, trying to land that left hook to the body, and backing up an older fighter whose legs may be fading.
Left hook to the body, right hand over the top, and Cotto throws a nice compact right hand. Will he be able to close the distance? That's going to be the thing. It's going to be a hell of a marathon. I think it's a long fight, and it's incumbent on Cotto to set a pace that where he can get him out of there like somewhere between 8 and 10, because I think Martinez will be stronger down the stretch. Cotto tires. Under Gavin McMillan, we've seen him one time, but the fight didn't go super long. I want to see him deep in a fight, in a hard fight. Can Cotto overcome his historic kind of late fades? Whereas Martinez, he carries his power and his strength all the way through, even if the middle of the fight is rough on him. I think it's a really great fight. It is taking a long time to get made, but it's going to be fun, man. That's one I kind of want to travel for. I need an understudy.
Javier, anything else?
Just for the record, I plan on being there on June 7th and then travel the next day to go to the Hall of Fame because Trinidad is getting inducted.
Next day. All I can say is, as Don King would say. Javier, thank you for the call.
Okay, bye.
And that was the voice that resonates all across the bandwidth, Javier from Puerto Rico. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
All of a sudden, in the 1111, it's a Skype number. You're live on the next round. Wow, I'm like Tito. I'm just knocking them down left and right. And there's Dave Duenas there on the line, the always reliable. Dave Duenas, are you just listening, or did you want to chime in?
Well, you know what? I was listening, but you know what? I was saving this for Lee Marie, but I might as well just pose a question because we got Steve here on the line. But I was watching today, early in the morning. I have insomnia really bad. So I always put on old fight tapes. I still got the VHS tapes, and I put on Michael Grant. And I was watching Michael Grant, and you know what came the thought was Michael Grant the very first sign of the decline of the heavyweight? And whatever happened to the Great White Hope? Was Joe Macy the last guy that we all looked at as the Great White Hope for Americans? What do you guys think?
Gabe, I don't know about you. Michael Grant to me signified one thing, that the American heavyweight at that point were not really boxers by trade. This was not their first instinct that these guys, if you go back to the history of Michael Grant, who actually went to junior college out here in Southern California, I believe at Mount SAC, a lot of these guys like Rockman, Derek Jefferson,
right,
and Michael Grant, they played other sports. They couldn't turn professional, couldn't earn a college scholarship. So then one day at age 19, 20, 21, 22, or Brian Jennings, 25, decided to go into professional boxing. That's what
right.
That signified to me. Layman Brewster is one of the – and Malik Scott are two of the last real heavyweights that were boxers first and foremost from their formative years. And as for Great White Hope, me and Gabe have talked about this for years. I guess the Klitschko's don't count because they're not corn-fed and white bread, but they are, by all accounts, white guys, aren't they?
They are white guys, but not considered by Americans as the hope because they're Europeans. And with Michael Grant, this is what I thought with Michael Grant was, he was like really the start of the rush of an American heavyweight where we didn't develop him. He was a guy that was a basketball player, football player, and he was big, physically looked athletic, and he looked like a heavyweight. but we rushed him. We wanted something. I mean, think about it. When he was in a, you know, back and forth, you know, up and down fight with Galata, and automatically we thought he was ready. Well, most people thought he was ready for Lennox Lewis. To me, it was like the start of a new era where we rushed our heavyweights to try to become the kings rather than develop them. Like the way George Foreman said, you know, we're all in the rush to get to that spot, but we're not patient enough to make it to that spot.
Yeah, Chris Arreola is a throwback to that. I mean, he's a I think he was a junior middleweight, and he's got nice boxing skills when he uses them. He still throws the right hand funky, but still, he fights, I think, with the mentality of a smaller guy. I'm not sure. I got to finish that piece that I've been working on. I'm not really sure where the great white hope went. I mean, the Klitschko's, they've done their thing, and in a sense, you know, they're making a lot of money. They're almost doing what Floyd's done, except, you know, they have their losses, but they just keep making money and making title defenses, and we haven't really thrown anybody worthwhile at them in a while. I think the big question we'll see if Vlad challenges himself for the last few fights of his career as things kind of get closer, other guys pick up belts, will the winner of Arreola Stavern go after him? You know, will he want that person?
Let me ask you this, Gabriel. Do we finally appreciate Lennox Lewis for once? I mean, how many folks did not appreciate him? How many folks just think he was boring? And now with Klitschko, which I think Klitschko is the Mayweather of the heavyweight division, you know, no matter who you put in front of against, I think he's better than Floyd. He actually would take a challenge if it's actually there. He's going to do the thing. He's going to do his performance. He's going to challenge himself. But going back to Lennox Lewis, the whole thing was here was a guy, had an accent, he was from Brent. Nobody cared about him. Nobody liked him because he was a switch hitter. If he knew he could take you out automatically like we did with Grant, he would do it. But if he knew that he had to take his time and he needed to be prepped up in order to be an executioner, he needed Emmanuel Stewart. So do we finally appreciate him? And do we miss Lennox Lewis now as an American? Not as a European, but as an American, do we miss him?
No.
Dave, I said this last week to Gabe. He was one of those heavyweights like Larry Holmes that 5 to 10 years after he retired, he got more respect as a champion than when he was an active fighter. I remember when he was still working for HBO in that short-lived run that he had as a color commentator being at fights, and he was hailed as this conquering hero. And I'd hear what the fans would say, like, we miss you, you were great, we need you back. And I'm saying to myself, guys, you people were never saying this. I remember relatively early in my career as a boxing reporter. Reviews were very mixed on Lennox Lewis, Dave. I can tell you that firsthand. I remember one time stating that I thought he made a very strong case for being a top 10 heavyweight. Yes, he had some knockouts, but he also had a very good run and that overall size that he had. And you would have thought that I did something to someone's mother. I couldn't believe the reaction. So I think most heavyweights who are not named Ali or Joe Lewis, they are not appreciated long after, or till long after they are retired.
You know, I got to agree with you. I mean, I drink tea during the heavyweights now because I'm far missed what Lennox Lewis has done. I miss him. You know, a guy that I never missed before. I'm actually missing him now.
Yeah, I don't miss him at all. I wasn't really into his
job. Thanks, God. You know, but yeah, that's about
it. Hey, Gabe, as he would say, absolutely.
Absolutely.
But anyway, Dave, listen, thanks for the call.
All right, guys. Thank you, too, man.
By the way, Smellity's had a tweet here. It says, Larry played stickball with Woody Allen. You got to ask him about that next time. You know what's funny? He actually told me that story, that, yeah, he actually did play stickball. Larry actually ran some very high circles. Gabe, do we have any more calls on the line?
Yeah. Let me switch back. In the 206, you're live on the next round.
Hey. My question is with the news that Triple G's promotion people don't want the fight with Laura, isn't it about time for them to stop saying that people don't want to fight him?
Here's the issue, though. All they're really stating is that there are hindrances. Here's what I think Tom Loeffler should do. Tom Loeffler should say to Lara and his people, okay, let's get to the table. But is Lara even going to be allowed to negotiate that fight, given the current circumstances of this business?
I'd hope so, yeah. But, you know, they –
you would hope so. Okay, but no,
saying,
I'm not talking about what you hope.
No,
let's deal with what is actually taking place
in
the business today.
They're saying today they're not interested in fighting him, rather than that there are hindrances. They flat out said not interested in him.
So with that being said, do you think that fight can realistically be made?
I think it could with his popularity and – how HBO keeps pushing them, I think they could do it if they wanted to.
Okay. I don't know what to really say. I personally think that K2 needs to call their bluff, because that's what I think they're doing. I think they're bluffing. But I agree with you. I think they need to at least say, then let's come to the table. But what are you going to say if they don't come to the table then? Are you going to continue to live in a fantasy world or the one that we live in?
See, and that's totally what I feel, too. They need to just say, okay, fine, we'll fight. And if it doesn't happen, then at least there are legitimate reasons, as opposed to hiding behind, oh, there's this and that, and saying that they're not interested, and no one will fight my guy. And I'm a Triple G fan, but even I get tired of hearing that.
Listen, I think this year is very interesting because I have a sense that he is not going to get the fight people want. And I think that there's an issue here that Peter Quillen, in my opinion, Gabe, should be the most natural guy. He has a belt. He's been on premium cable out here. He's a bright, colorful personality. But guess what, Gabe? I don't think Peter Quillen has any interest in making the fight. And beyond that, there is the Cold War issue.
Well, and I think it's a branding issue, too, in that Golden Boy, they have a middleweight crown, and that's gold. They have a piece of it. And you're marketing to completely different people. You know, I mean, some of the people are the same that watch that have HBO and watch, you know, the rest of the middleweight champions also have Showtime. But then there's a lot of people that don't. But so they have this whole other Marvel universe that Golden Boy's created. And I imagine, you know, it's going to be Jacobs Quillen at some point. They can keep it in-house in New York. If Jacobs wins, they've got themselves a future star, that's born and bred in New York and a middleweight champion. They're not going to risk that against Triple G if they don't have to. And with the way the networks are, they don't have to. So I think, you know, there's certainly problems for Triple G in that. One guy would be a natural fight, which would be Quillen. It'd be an action fight, and it would be a knockout kind of fight he can't have. And then the rest of the guys don't want any part of him, it doesn't seem. Martin Murray doesn't want any part of him. Daniel Gill doesn't want any part of him. It doesn't, you know.
Felix Sturm, Gabe, flat out paid $100,000 not to fight him when he was a mandatory. I mean, listen, his first fight on HBO was supposed to be against the guy that knocked out Daniel Jacobs, who was the WBO champion at the time, Dmitry Pirog. He got injured. This is not a black or white issue. Here, I don't even know what to say at this point, you know. But with that being said, I think Andy Lee, listen, I like Andy Lee, one of the nicest guys I've ever met. I don't know if that's a step forward for Gennady Golovkin at this stage of his career.
Is Sergio Mora?
You know, I've told this to Sergio. Sergio, stop living off the contender in 2005 and actually fight a little bit like Curtis Stevens and build your case. And Sergio keeps saying, my record is my case. You know, Sergio, one of these days you're going to learn you're not as smart as you think you are as it relates to managing your career. That's all I'm going to say. This is the same guy that turned down $850 to fight Jermaine Taylor because it was in Memphis. Just so Sergio can run his career any way he wants, but the guys who are active are getting the fights. I think he needs to realize that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's – I don't think I really can add anything to it. Do we have anything else from you, caller? Did you have another question?
No, that's it.
All right, thanks a lot. Gabe, let's wrap this
thanks
up here.
Much.
Do we have any more calls on the line? We take one more.
In the 267, you're live on the next round. 267.
Hey, it's 267. Can you hear me?
Yeah, did you have a call?
Yes, what's going on?
How we doing?
We can barely hear you, so speak up, please.
Okay, no problem. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now.
Okay, no problem. I really enjoyed that Larry Merchant interview. That was really good. I appreciate that. Thanks.
Oh, glad you enjoyed it.
He's one of the best. I mean, he's got insight. He's been, like you said, from Basilio and Robinson. That's a long time ago. I guess that's 60 years now. So he's got at least 60 years into the boxing game. But you were mentioning Triple G. He's probably right now the best middleweight out there, in my opinion. And that's Quinlan, Martinez. And Martinez is my favorite. But I think, you know, with his injuries, he may not be the same guy he was 2 years ago. So I really think that Triple G's the man right now. And as far as heavyweights, there's a couple out there. I mean, you know, you got Perez. You know, I thought he looked good. He looked pretty good out there, the Spanish guy from Ireland, by way of Cuba. But I really don't see a lot in the heavyweights anymore. I mean, really, you know, the good fights are, you know, middleweight down, I guess. Light heavyweights are starting to pick up. But as far as the heavyweights, I really don't see nothing. And as far as the Klitschko's, I don't care if they win 100 fights. Really, I don't. I just never seen nothing to them. I saw two real big guys who understood how to keep an angle and keep a jab in your face and then grab you when he gets close. That's not boxing. I mean, it really isn't. I mean, Emmanuel Stewart took that over there. They showed him, listen, this is what you do. Keep a jab in his face. There's no fighting going on there. I don't see them as great heavyweights. As a matter of fact, I don't see them as in the top 10 of all-time heavyweights. Honestly, I don't.
Interesting. I do think the one thing that hurts them, this is a very weak era of heavyweights. And historically, the heavyweight division has had a lot of weak eras. There was the 80s with Larry Holmes dominating a bunch of guys with Don King that were all coked up.
Yeah.
There was the Bum of the Month Club. Mike Tyson, let's be honest, he didn't fight a very strong era of heavyweights. But I think the Klitschko's, the one thing I do like about them is their consistency. And if you look at their knockout percentage, Gabe, if you just go by the black and white record, it is among the highest in heavyweight history. But I don't disagree. The Klitschko's can be very, very difficult to watch at times.
Yeah, and that's really what it comes down to me, I guess, as a fan. You know, I mean, you remember the things like, you know, when Ron Lyle fought George Foreman, you know, two guys just fighting. And I'm not saying there wasn't any science involved. There was. But there was also some guys taking chances. And that's something I don't see much anymore. I mean, like with Mayweather. I'm not a big fan of Mayweather, I'll be honest. I mean, I'm a fan of a guy who's willing to take chances like Ray Leonard did. Okay, I'll fight Hagler. He almost got, he could have got killed in that fight, and I did pick him to win. But the thing is, Mayweather, he doesn't have, I mean, Mayweather's a businessman, and I guess I respect that. But as far as boxing, I don't respect that. You know, everybody he fights is, a year ago was 20 pounds lighter. He doesn't take any chances. Now, I don't mean just in the ring, but like, fight Triple G. What's wrong with fighting Triple G? What's wrong with fighting Martinez?
There's a lot. Listen, we're literally down to our last 90 seconds. We're going to let you go, okay?
You got it.
Thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it.
But, Gabe, I think there's a double standard, though. We've talked about this many times. The Klitschko's just win by any means necessary. It's not enough. Other guys win. It's all about winning. I think there is a bias against the Klitschko's, though.
If they were two giant black guys from Brooklyn and they were brothers and everything, they would be worshipped as gods. Always said that. Or even like, you know, a couple of Mexican guys. But because they're Ukrainians, even if they were two white guys from Boston, I think we would love them. But because they're two Ukrainian guys, we can't really connect. You know, maybe it is just the white guy thing because they are skillful and they're both really good at utilizing their strengths and weaknesses and what they do well, what they don't. You know, and they have very distinct styles. Maybe it's because their losses are more exciting than their wins. I don't know, but they've been dominant, and it is a double standard. But
All right, well, that's it for this week's show. We want to thank the great Larry Merchant for blessing us with his presence. Always fun to have him on. On behalf of Gable Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying, till the next round, goodbye, everybody.